Phil Kaplan, we'll start with you, as always. Happy with the weekend as it went by, rugby-wise? What were your thoughts of round six?
It's the quarterway stage before the split. And when you can go from bottom of the league to fifth place, then obviously there is that uncertainty of outcome that they were looking for. 2 points only between fourth, which would get you in the playoffs, and bottom of the table, which is exactly what you'd want. So if St Helens and Leeds had played ball and start losing a few games, then it would be absolutely perfect. But I think, again, we've had a weekend where teams go into it under pressure, come out of it and breathe a huge sigh of relief, and that's going to change up to and over the Easter period. And I think, as we've said virtually every week here, that once we get out of that third game at Easter, we've seen how decimated some squads will be and how teams are scrabbling around for results, then we can take a view on the league table. But at the moment, Saints unbeatable, and are just starting to put a gap between themselves and even third and fourth place, and as the points are carried over, that's quite significant. Leeds back on winning ways, everybody else much of a muchness.
Yeah, they are indeed, and down at the bottom of the Super League table, poor old Richard Shorites, Wakefield Trinity Wildcats. Yes. Richard, what? 2 out of 2, now you're 4 out of 4. Defeats, though, what's gone wrong?
Hubris. I'm excited because I've got the latest 4020 magazine, which features, under a title of The Culture, a picture of Mark. I'm holding up to the camera. You probably still can't see it.
I've probably broken it now.
Because I'm doing anything to distract from talking about my side. I guess this was always going to happen, wasn't it? Especially when you go 2 games unbeaten at the start of the season, what a run. But, yeah, I think that defeat at Widnes, and as much as Wakefield supporters are clamouring for, or certain elements of the Wakefield support are clamouring for the return of Jared Sammet, the key issue you would think is not necessarily the attacking prowess of the side, but the defensive side of the side. To concede a hat-trick to any player, say another way, Scott Wicks, fantastic effort in the first 10 minutes of a match, has got to concern anyone, especially when they seem to come down the same side. So that's the more of a concern for me at Wakefield at the moment, is the defence, but plenty of time to turn it around.
Yes, indeed. Just think, though, Rich, you go to the DW this weekend. If you beat
Wigan,
you'll be above him in the table.
Exactly.
I don't know what you're worried about.
I know, good.
No problem. Let's introduce George and Toby King, then, from the Warrington Wolves, two brothers making a way in the game. George, you were involved against St Helens the other night. What was that like?
Yeah, really good. I mean, both St Helens and Warrington crowd put up a really good atmosphere, so a really good experience to play in such a big big game. Obviously, the results didn't go our way. I don't think we played particularly the best that we can possibly do. There's definitely room for improvement, and we'll definitely try to put things right this week. But the game itself, we definitely thought we could scrape a point at the end. But yeah, I think our attack needs to improve, and it will. And training this week, we've been really solid this week, especially within our attack. We're really looking to put things right this week.
What have you made of the step up to Super League and playing? You know, playing quite regularly now.
Oh yeah, definitely. The step up's definitely a big one. Like anything, it's always going to be big. But the biggest thing I've found is all like mentally. I think players, the battle prone, like you know, like 32, the 31, the more mature players, what play week in, week out. So the battle hardened. So you've got to be on your toes constantly. You've got to have a real good work ethic, and you've got to give something as well. You can't take a step back, you've always got to go forward, and that's the thing I found the difference is, mentally.
Have you noticed there's a transition happening at Warrington? We've mentioned it at a couple of the other clubs, that you're part of the next generation coming through now, that you've got the Joe Philbins, the James Lathwaites, the Ben Currys.
We definitely like to think so. I mean, like, we're always looking forward, you know, but you've got to look back as well. I think our academies are really good. We've got players in there who are just really good and ready to take a step up as well. A lot of talk on, like, me, like, Toby and, like, Philbin and a few other players as well. But behind us, like we just said, we're looking forward, like, we're looking in a direction, like, looking at the Monaghans, your Bridges, you know, all these top experienced players. But you also got look behind you as well and keep on your toes that way. Yeah.
Toby, oh, sorry, go on, Phil.
No, no, I was going to say, presumably you've got people like Ben Westwood around, Ashton Sims as well.
Yeah.
You've got role models.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
And perhaps it's a phrase that we use too liberally in sport, but you've got guys in the dressing room, as you mentioned, battle-hardened, that presumably give you the right example of how to be a full-time professional rugby league player.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Just speaking on that, Ash and other players as well, brilliant role models. I mean, like my first day of a full-time pre-season training, I came into the gym and there must have been about 13 lads already there an hour before training, getting themselves ready. I mean, I've never experienced anything like that before. I mean, I normally come in 15, 20 minutes before, but not an hour before. And it's something that I've brought on board now. I definitely copy off what other people do, even the good stuff. Try and stay away from the bad habits, but the good habits as well, and the rope definitely, like your Ashtons, your players like Benny Westwood, they've got so many good stuff that you're definitely taking on board, that's for sure.
Okay, and Toby, you've been injured at the minute. You've got a crack on the jaw. What happened there?
I was playing Wigan Academy. I went in to score a try, I think it was about 20 minutes in, and all of a sudden I got up from scoring and I had my jaw hanging off, so one of the best experiences of my life. But yeah, these things happen in sport, though. It's the risk you take.
And when are we going to see you regularly in the Warrington team, do you hope?
Hopefully I'm back next week, so I'm going to get back to academy and start hitting form again. Like, you know, I'll do everything I can do, like, so Tony doesn't have a choice not to play me. That's all I can do, really, is, you know, hit the ground running in academy, and once I get that step up, that's my time to take it.
You were part of the England Academy, weren't you, that beat Australia? What was that like for you?
Oh, one of the best experiences of my life, that, you know, to beat Australia. People always talk about Australia this, Australia that, but I've got a cocky arrogance about them, and I know they beat us in the first game, so the second game we had to beat them by, I think it was around 12 points, because they beat us by 12, and we ended up just, we smashed them, we took them apart and in every department, and, you know, they were one of the best feelings of my life, honestly. You were amazing, yeah.
For years, we've seen Phil and Rich, England teams bullied, battered, beaten by Australia. Do you guys, you will have that mental worry or anguish about it? Do you go out now, like you said, you just went out and you battered them, you took it to them? There's no fear there now,
exactly,
is there?
Yeah, I think Rich Marshall, you know, he was the head coach there. I think he just drilled into us, you know, they're not superstars, these Australians. They're beatable, they're there for taking, and as soon as we got that mind frames, we literally just didn't hold back, we just went at him, and I think that's what changed the outcome of the game.
Well, we'll talk about dual registration later and the impacts that might have had, particularly on the Challenge Cup this weekend, but you're at, again, that interesting stage in your progression that there might be a slight time lag between the academy and the first team. Would you be happy going to somewhere like North Wales Crusaders and stepping up a level against men? Is that something you feel you need to do?
You know what?
I was just going to say, I've done that for two games this season, because the quality of the squad that we have at Warrington meant that I have to do dual reg. But I really loved it. I had loads of thought that, it's not going to be this and it's not going to be that. But when I went there, I honestly really loved it. The lads were brilliant. They were really well set up. I thought the coach were brilliant, Andy Murray. And the player really good style rugby. So I think dual reg can work if it's used in the right manner. But I understand what other people, like, you know, what other people have to say about it. But I really enjoy my time at dual reg. With North Wales Crusaders,
do you think
that's
it would benefit you, because you will be playing against a more physically developed person?
I definitely think that'll help me, because when you obviously make a step up from academy to first team, it's a lot different. You're going from playing 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds to suddenly hitting up against 30-year-olds. So definitely playing dual edge will definitely let me able.
Okay, good stuff. You got any questions for the King boys? You might be sat home wondering why we've got two lads on from Warrington, but they are Yorkshire boys. I'm saying that. You live in Yorkshire, don't you?
Yeah, we are Yorkshire boys. Yeah,
yeah, good stuff. Is it at Meltham, your club?
Meltham,
your club, and developed there.
Both
went to the Giants, but both ended up moving on.
Yeah, both moving on, yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. You got any questions for the boys? Do get them in at RL on RY. We're going to be reflecting back on a big win for the Leeds Rhinos in shortly. We're also going to hear from Brian McDermott and Sean Wayne as well. We ask the question every week, who's the big winners and big losers of the weekend, Rich? And Wigan, well, they're struggling, mate, aren't they? They are struggling big time.
It's just not happening for them, is it? And we go back to what people have said from the start of the season. They haven't got a settled, experienced half-back partnership. Matty Smith can't do anything by himself, and when he's suspended, he certainly can't do anything. But
I'm going to jump in there. I'd argue the other night, I thought Williams was the better of the two half-backs.
I don't think it's about the backs. I think, again, you can read what you like into stats, but if the Opta stats that are issued at the end of every game were correct, not a single Wigan forward made over 100 metres. And I think between about three or four of them, they only made what we might term a handful of carries. You're not going to win when your forwards aren't going forward. Your halfbacks are not going to create. I think if there is an issue in the game at the moment, we've got some terrific back divisions, but we're not seeing the best of them at more than one side. But Wigan's one of them. You know, Sargentson and Burgess on the left hand side looked a threat every time they got the ball, but they didn't get the ball that often. The same could be said of Leeds. You know, Callum Watkins is arguably the strike centre in the competition at the moment. Does he see enough ball? Probably not. So I think that's an issue around. Your forwards need to get on top first of all, but you've got to have halfbacks that can spread the ball, and we're not seeing enough open rugby at the moment, I don't think. No. A lot of points, but not enough open rugby.
I did really enjoy Rob Burrow's try. Right at the end, just scampering under the...
He didn't even have to scamper, did he? He just put his eye out.
It was lovely.
Off a terrible play the ball as well.
The kind of thing you think, yeah, I'd pay money to go see skill like that, because it's just something simple, and yet a thing of beauty. I really enjoy that moment. And a good win for Leeds, and you know, they've bounced back from that defeat the other week, and they still look a side who are going to be challenging all season long. And did they miss Kevin Sinfield? No, they didn't.
I think the most impressive thing was the crowd.
Yeah.
18,350, a summer era record for that fixture. That told you that if we get the games right, we get the events right, you're building on the back of 12,000, obviously, at St Helens the night before. 30,000 people going to see two games. That's a success.
What was it like at Langtree Park then? On was it Thursday? That was a Thursday game, wasn't it? What was it like when you ran out? I mean, atmosphere, it comes across well. We've beat at Langtree Park many times. Yeah. What's it like, though, when you ran out as an enemy, if you like?
It was really good. Goosebumps almost. The crowd really got on top of you, that's for sure. I mean, real passionate crowd, both our crowd and the Saints crowd. But yeah, real good atmosphere, and a real good spectacle. And I mean, as a neutral, watching the game, I'm sure it was really good to go and watch the game, not just for the game itself, but for the atmosphere. What were there?
We look on every week at this St Helens pack. You're part of a big pack of your own at Warrington, but yeah. I mean, what's it like coming up against them? Have you just got to forget who's in the shirt and just tackle it as though it were me or Rich there, if you like?
If you're going to a game worrying about a pack what's ahead of you, they're going to dominate you. That's for sure. So you got to take every game with a positive head and really know that your opposition, you're going to be better than them. That you're going to get one over on them. You can't go into a game half-hearted thinking, oh, their pack is big, their pack is going to do this, their pack is going to do that. You got to have a clear mind, positive mind.
And what about being part of the team that you're part of and being an equal within that team? What did Tony Smith say to you when he brought you into the squad? How did he approach it with you?
He said, bring your own game, what fits our style of rugby. He said, make sure you concentrate on your own game with your own, and practice your 1%ers. Your 1%ers, you know, anything what the small bits what add up to the big bits. He said, really work on your game, what can maximise the team going forward.
He encourages you to play as well. He's one of those coaches that doesn't say, you know, just take the ball in and retain it. If you think the pass is on, then he's one of the kind of guys that's philosophy is let's play a bit of rugby.
More like off the cuff style of play. Like, I think it can be good to watch the style of play we play.
Like, I mean, like, we've got players like Mickey Ayam and Daz Clark. We had Michael Monahan last year. Brilliant players that can just get out of hooker and just, you know, find a gap out of nowhere. And when you got players like that, you just play off the back of them.
And has he broken the game down for you as kids? Because I know that when he arrived at Leeds, one of the things that he had a group of young players that were talented, very much like what you've got at Warrington at the moment, hadn't really got that knowledge of how to win. but he broke everything down, you know, lots of passing drills, lots of skills drills, a lot of time on the training field, just so that when you did go out there, it became
natural,
instinctive. Is that the kind of thing he's been doing with you?
That's all I want you to talk.
Yeah, definitely. It's more basic on the skills, like, it's nothing complicated. If you've got an offload, you take it. Most teams nowadays, they've got a set piece and they go to that set piece and they play that player, but if you see something on, you go and you back yourself, and if it doesn't come off, then it's not that bothered. Yeah. You've tried that opportunity.
We've got like two terrific coaches in Richard Agar and Lee Breers as well, what comes in and does a few skill sessions. So when you've got players like Lee Breers, what's got an absolute brilliant career, had a brilliant career, and his skills out through the roof, coming in and teaching you different ways of passing the ball and catching the ball, and, you know, ATC. So it's just brilliant.
And Lee was never one to follow a game. No. He was the one to play it as he
saw.
So presumably he teaches the drop goal as well, I would imagine. I mean, just talking stats, going back to the game on Thursday night, I know you can read whatever you want into stats, but two struck me as being astonishing in St Helens. Attilio Vey, 202 metres. I mean, that is almost unheard of for a forward to be doing 200 metres. And Alex Walmsley, 180 as a prop. And again, going back to what we were saying about Wigan, you know, Attilio Vey's 202 metres is almost the same as the entire Wigan pack would have done. Yeah. You know, and maybe that's the difference at the moment, that there isn't enough traction going forward at Wigan, and Saints are winning on the back of almost demolishing opposition up front.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Got to ask you, boys, how's Ben Evans after he ruptured his hamstring the other night? I mean, it sounds painful. It makes my eyes water now. Yeah. But how was he afterwards?
It was all in good spirits, to be fair. Like, you know, like something like that can really damage a player. But I think it is a pretty serious injury, and I just wish the best for the kid, because he's honestly a top bloke. I've got along with him as soon as I came into the first team. And you know, it's sad to see these sort of things, and it happened to Simon Griggs as well last year, and he's the same. The way he's doing his rehab and the way he goes about it, it's really good as well.
One thing about Benny, he'll bounce back.
Ben Evans, he'll be back.
You've been out injured, obviously it's part of the game that you play, isn't it? You know, what's it like when you're injured? Do you feel a little bit out of it, or are you just involved the same? How does it work?
You sort of do it first. Like, I remember when I was in the change rooms and the doctor just literally said he needs to go out, he's broke his jaw. You know, I almost burst into tears, thinking, is this, have I messed up my chance here? Because obviously I want to break into first team and that, but, you know, like, the week after that, everyone's so supportive around here. We've got, like, the best medical team, they're really good on me, and you just get straight into, like, your weights, and, you like, with my jaw, like, I could go on the bike, and I was just doing running, fitness, weights all the time, and hopefully I'm going to come back stronger, so... In a way, they say when you're injured, you come back stronger and fitter. So,
how's Darrell Clark settling in? Because obviously, the big signing for Super League as a whole in 2015, but he spent all his career playing a different system with another set of lads and different body language. Yeah. And have you made him feel welcome? Is he already?
We also know because me and Toby travel on the motorway on M62, so we normally hit rush. We normally hit rush hour, don't we?
Yeah.
So it can be anything up to an hour and a half to 2 hours, but
he got out of it.
So he managed to skip the Yorkshire bus, clever guy. But yeah, he's fitting in really well. You could tell he was a man of steel as soon as he got to training, and the way he plays, you can definitely see it within him, and his work ethic's brilliant.
He's only going to get better, presumably, as well, because he's only played half a dozen games with you, so it can only be good.
Mm.
I heard a rumour, I don't know if this is true, you two will be able to tell me, that when you were little, you weren't allowed to have your tea until you'd done some skills drills, is that right? Are you telling me about this? Is this correct?
Or? I've never heard this, have you?
Eh? No, he's saying it then.
No,
bouncing the ball or something, I don't know.
I know, my dad had me out on the park doing a lot of skills and stuff, and he was my coach for all my amateur career, my dad, so... He was big on my skills, but he let me have my dinner.
It looks like you've had man and riches as well, the amount you've grown up. What was it like having your dad involved then as you grew up as a coach? Was it hard? Did he treat you any worse than the other kids? Or, you know, were he more strict with you guys? Or
No, I wouldn't say so. he were always positive, really positive. He coached me and Toby since we're, what?
About seven or eight,
yeah. All the way up to about 13, 14s.
To 16.
No, I moved on into.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's always been a positive. Obviously, if you got your dad there, it's actually quite hard for him because he's got other kids to coach as well.
I think on that, he didn't just take it like just to. As I know, he's got himself 16 people on scholarship through his career coaching Eltham in four internationals, so it wasn't just biased to us doing a.
No, definitely not, no.
Looking up to him, he were pretty inspirational for what he did for us in
but,
the game.
But now, I think he loves coming to watch our games now and.
Yeah.
You know, if you've had a good game or a bad game, if your dad says so, because he knows you since you were young. So,
do you look at like the Burgess brothers and think there might be some parallels there?
Definitely,
they're inspirational. Them boys, I watch them on just in the NRL, and when Sam used to play there, that would be the dream to. I mean, obviously, there's not four of us, but just two of us, just taking on the world. Like that's something.
Definitely,
long term.
Like the brothers over there. I mean, we've got. We had a couple of brothers last year in Bridget's and Monaghan's and Philbin's and I think there's Evans as well. When me and Toby stepped up last year, we obviously followed them brothers as well.
Who's the best player then?
Position,
get your dad off for the
casting role? I put my hand up here. Toby's a very good player. Scores many tries. But I set them up.
Who's driving tonight?
Me, I've driven everywhere. Being Warrington to Leeds.
Fair enough. We're gonna look back now at Leeds against Wigan. You got any questions for the boys? Do send them in. Craig's been on, and what's he had to say on Twitter? At RL on RY.
Yeah, he's a Wigan fan. We've lost too many players since their 2013 double win, and the youngsters, although very talented, still that vital experience. Also, Matty Brownie's nowhere near the player he once was. Needs to give Ryan Hampshire a run at fullback. Brackets, Wayne's still a fan fave, by the way. So still has the fans support. Obviously,
does he?
Well, that's what Craig says.
Yes, Craig's.
Yes, Craig's support.
Okay.
Is he a man under pressure? We keep asking
Phil,
every week.
Is he under pressure now, Sean Wayne?
I think we said that you can talk about coaches being under pressure at the start of the season, but after Easter is the time. I mean, by then, Wigan will have played St Helens, and we all know that Good Friday game is a determining factor for some coaches' futures. And I think if after Easter, certainly the third game, you adrenaline can get you through the second one. It's the third one that is a real tough struggle and not normally a very good watch either. If after that Wigan are still floundering around the seventh or eighth position, and I mean at the moment, you know, they're 7 points behind St Helens. If that was to be 14-16 even this early in the season, if you're not in or around the top four when the league breaks after 23 rounds, you are not going to win the competition. There's none of this, you know, you've got seven games then to pick up. You know, the most you can get is 14 points. It may not even be enough. So I think that if you are going to have change, it's going to come after Easter. Who's under threat? Not Wakefield, because I don't think the expectation is anything other than where they are at the moment. Not Hull or Hull KR. Again, I think the plan that they're both going down is one to bring more local kids in, to change the culture. They're inconsistent. They're winning one week and losing the next, but there is an element of progress at both of those clubs at the moment. Not at Castleford. Darryl Powell last year already bought himself this year, and I think everybody knows the circumstances he's coaching under, and it's not quite the same. Probably not Salford, because again, although the doctor can be slightly volatile, I think he's realised that changing your coach like you change your socks doesn't get you anywhere. So he bought Tim Sheens in. There was a slight improvement, little step back last week, but I think he's realised that all of that changing the coach on a whim doesn't work. And next team up is Wigan, so I would say yes, there is a pressure there.
Okay,
their run of fixtures, by the way, obviously they play Wakefield on Friday, then they've got Saints on Good Friday, Salford on the Easter Monday, Catalans is the third one on the Sunday afterwards. Then
is that away?
It's at home. Right. We've got two home fixtures in a row against Catalans and then Warrington.
Because that's the tough one, so if somebody had to go to Catalan after Easter.
Here's Leeds tilting for the line. Rob Burrow right on the line will play the ball on this near side. He's going to go himself and he's in. That is it. Rob Burrow had to wait an hour to get on. But when he comes on, he scores the winning try. Leeds lead by 26 points to 14.
We showed a lot of commitment, a bit of desire, a bit of attitude. Came back from some ebbs and flows that didn't go our way in the game. A win for tenacity there, I think.
We'd not played anywhere near the standard what I know we can, and we're losing by 2 points. So it was easy fixable. We just need to get to the end of our sets, play with a bit of composure and convicting our players, and then make them work hard to get out of their half, and we didn't do that.
Short ball from Donnybrook, looked a forward one. But here comes Scott Griggs chiming in, and Griggs has beaten one man, and Griggs is heading for the post, and Scott Griggs will score the first try of the afternoon with a minute and 1 second on the stopwatch here.
Exactly what the Giants did last year, started off like a house on fire. Great ball movement, the current hand of the forwards, Brett Ferris, nice and wide on the left-hand flank, and good support play from the full-back, Scott Griggs.
We weren't good enough, didn't play well enough, well and truly got what we deserved. We handed them 18 points to start the game, and we probably handed them another 20-odd points during the game.
No, we went scrappy for probably 10-15 minutes there, and we give Wakefield some ball, and Wakefield got some very good attacking plays, and if you're giving the ball in the right areas of the field, they're going to cause you problems. I thought we'd get our composure back, and you know, we deserved the win in the end.
Yeah, that was the week that was on our two live games, a win for Leeds and a comprehensive win for Huddersfield that involved a bit of scoey bashing from the Wakefield fans as well. He's had to have a night off in sympathy, Rich.
We need to get him some stewards just to stand in front of him to stop the... For those who've never been to Bellevue or don't know where we commentate from, we're right at the back of the stand, so about five rows back. There's a row of empty seats, and then there are the supporters in the wild able to throw their criticisms and comments at commentators while they are doing their job, as I'm sure Mark has...
I had my most gut-wrenching experience as a commentator. I was there. It was the week someone had nicked the scoreboard from Wakefield.
Which is a good story, but not one
so,
from
there. Yeah, so I'm there commentating on the game, and a lady in front of me turns around and starts shouting, you've got the score wrong. And obviously on the radio, people, you can hear it, it's as simple as that. And she spent 10 minutes telling me I got the score wrong, and the producer in me is saying, no, you definitely got the score right, we've looked everywhere, it's the right score. And then after about 10 minutes, she went, oh yeah, you've got it right, haven't you? But that way, that's what you get. And I listen back to the game, Phil, and Scully's getting pelters off the fans. He divides opinion wherever he goes, this man.
I think I'd rather have two young lads in whose combined age is less than his, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm not going to say anything mean, because he might record the show and then come back and get
he's
you.
He's too busy having a testimonial dinner, isn't he, tonight?
I think he actually he'll be on his, something at Shawcross, I think, something, I don't know.
Duke's having a night out. So, yeah, he's 15th Guinness, he'll be on there.
He's having a jolly up his scoey. No surprise there to our regular listeners. Keep your tweets coming in, at RL, on RY, you're more than welcome along. We've got the King brothers, Toby and George, with us tonight from the Warrington Wolves. They were at the Huddersfield Giants. So let's ask the question then, guys. Why are you no longer at the Huddersfield Giants? We'll start with... Well, Toby, we'll start with you.
Why am I not there? Well, in...
Well, what made you go to Warrington then?
It was the fact that... it came up to under-16s, and it comes to that time of the year where the coaches, they select the side for the academy, and... They didn't see anything for me in their academy, so obviously it's easy to just, you know, sulk up about it, but Tommy Gleeson, the Yorkshire scout, he saw something in me, and I kept in contact with him quite a bit, and he took me to Warrington and showed me around. You know, it was just great facilities, everything, that they just saw potential in me, and I had to take it. I had no other choice. So.
Was that I'm guessing it was quite an upsetting time for you.
Yeah,
you said, we're not going to give you a go.
I love Giants. I season ticket holder all my life. I was pretty good, but you know, within a year of leaving, I made the England squad. I signed first team. Remember debut the year after. You know, everything, which is kind of a blessing in disguise. Everything went well for me. So probably, if I did get offered a contract, maybe I wouldn't be in this situation. So everything just seemed to go up from.
Would you sign it if you'd got one at the Giants? Would you stay?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't really know, because I did with Warrington. It just everything seemed right. Like when I went round, the head of youth, John Bastian, Ben Lesby, I was speaking to him, and they just everything seemed great. Everything
was about George him. There then at this time?
No, Georgie was 2 years after, I think. George,
so you were the
actually,
first one to go.
He got offered in under 15s and under 16s, but he turned it down both times and stayed at the Giants. So I think they might have been a bit on edge, thinking, "Oh, we're going to sign now, we're going to not." But you know, they probably might not have known that we're getting released from the Giants, but probably they do now.
No, don't mind. It's too late now.
I think they knew anyway. They had to know, but. You know, Tommy Gleeson, I still speak to him now. I owe him my career, really. Like, he's done everything for me. I won't be playing the game without him. So,
Excellent. Good. That's nice to hear. George, was it as straightforward for you, mate, or a little bit different?
A little bit different. A little bit on the same lines, but not much. I'll just start off by saying we worked out well for us so far at Warrington, and some players at Huddersfield work out for them as well. Sometimes they don't work out for you at a different club, and that's just what's happened with me and Toby. Huddersfield are a great club, honestly. They do some terrific stuff, don't get me wrong, but me and Toby just happen to be doing well now at Warrington. I left Huddersfield on my last year, my second year at academy, under 19s. I was out of contract, and I felt my rugby wasn't going in the direction I wanted it to. Huddersfield wanted to sign me on my last year in my 19s contract. I wanted another move to better myself. I wanted a fresh start. And then luckily the chance came around where Huddersfield, Warrington and family, we had a discussion, and it was the right thing for me to move on, and I'm grateful for all sides, and just happened to move on to Warrington and come play with my brother for academy, and it were on my last year in academy at Warrington, and it was from there that I signed first team.
I think he just missed me, really.
That's not what he said outside.
I went to Warrington.
Speaking to you both, and you've both mentioned, you know, your dad, etc., and people that have helped you, it seems you've got a big family unit behind you. I mean, how important is that to you? As two lads, you're in a high pressure environment, aren't you?
Definitely.
It's not doing a bit of filing for your job. You're going out and you're putting your body on the line every time you pull a shirt on.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I think, I know when we both made our debut, there must have been about 20, 30 of my family running around saying, can we get tickets?
Yeah.
They were all there, so yeah. You know, it's a big support. And I do love them for it, it's great.
Good stuff.
I mean,
stuff.
We mentioned Brad Singleton before the break and how it's taken him 3 years to adjust and be given his opportunity. Are you prepared to be that patient if that's what it takes? Because it must be really tough.
Don't get me wrong, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But as a player, and I think Toby will agree, we want to be making an impact now. You know, we want to be making a statement now. But like you say, good on Brad, 3 years, but look at him now, he's doing really well, isn't he? So if me and Toby can... It takes us three years, but for me, it's a week by week basis of just improving, getting better, fighting my way in, playing regular. It's just that, really.
And sooner or later, you will play against Huddersfield. It could even be over the Easter period.
Yeah, this week.
What will you feel like? I mean, it's who you're playing for that matters.
Yeah, exactly. And Huddersfield is my hometown club. I used to support them as a kid, and when I go out, it'll just be any normal team, really, any regular team. Some really good coaches at Huddersfield, and I had a good time there. Not so good on the last few months, and a lot of things around there I'm not going to discuss, but yeah, I had a good time at Huddersfield, and when I go and play them, it won't be with hate in my heart, that's for sure. It'll be with a lot of positive, and I'll really give it a go.
If you go back to the John Smiths, then obviously later on in the year, will there be some of your Meltham teammates giving you some stick or what?
I know some of them who I played with still play for their academy set up. So when I do play them, we're all like best of mates, so I do get along with them all.
Good stuff, excellent stuff. The King brothers, Toby and George, with us tonight. Plenty of tweets coming in at RL on RY, Rich.
Yeah, is this one of your Danny King?
Is it? Oh, he's my cousin.
Bring back games to the under 15s scholarship as well as under 16s, 18s, and then have under 20s like it used to be. I miss seeing the academy games before the main game in Super League kickoff. I thought that was always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to just quickly jump in there. You said, Phil, it might be an off-air actually, but about the New Zealand games that are coming up at the end of the season. We've got a Hull, we've got a Wigan, 25,000 seat stadium. Yep, we should sell that out. Could they have gone to a bigger ground, an Etihad, an Old Trafford, and says, tell you what, we'll have England, Australia on before it as well, or it's at not, the academy level?
It's not could they have done, they should have done.
Yeah, well, so I
think it is a lack of ambition. I mean, I'm
is it the fear of not selling the ground out?
Yeah,
it's
a lack of
self
confidence in the sport. I mean, I don't have any doubt that the Olympic Stadium will sell out, partly on the basis of the fact that a lot of people just want to go to the Olympic Stadium. So if you can get 54,000 in London, why are we frightened to go to stadiums that hold 25,000 in Hull and Wigan? That, you know, I think at a time when the Rugby Union World Cup is going to be on, we need to be brash. We're playing for. New Zealand are playing for the right to be possibly the top-ranked nation in the world, which is astonishing when you think that as long as we've all been watching international rugby, it's always been Australia. Since ever there have been world rankings, Australia have always been number one. And England desperately need to get back to number two. And we've got some great youngsters coming through. We've got some guys who will be coming back from the NRL who we haven't seen for a year. We've got a draw there. We've got an attraction. But because we're innately conservative with a small c about how we perceive people will think we look if there's half a stadium full, we tend to go for the tried and trusted. We go to the venues where we know we can sell out. You know, why not go to Ellen Road, which might hold 45,000? Why not go to the Etihad? You know, why not go to even St James's Park in Newcastle?
The World Cup, Rich, you went to a few of those. Well, you were involved with
it. I was a volunteer,
didn't you? I mean, if that not told us anything, we can put an event on when we actually try and we market it and we put it out there. And
there was the offers, weren't they, a year or so before the final, get your tickets, get a free hat or whatever. And I thought, I'm going to buy tickets to go to the World Cup final because it's in Manchester, it's
you
accessible.
You just wanted a free hat.
Wanted a free hat.
And you didn't know that England were going to get there, and it didn't matter.
No, because it was a great
and
day.
As I am, they didn't, but
no. And I was close to the pitch. I saw the Australians walk past with the cup afterwards, which was, you know, nice and also galling as well. But it was a great occasion. And people want to see events. The general public at large, not just rugby league spectators, they want to see events. We saw that with the Olympics and the Paralympics. Things which sold out, which attracted crowds, which people generally don't care about. If you make an event, the Magic Weekend, if you make an event, if you say to the people of Newcastle, this is a great event, the tickets are cheap, you'll enjoy yourself, come along.
It's about giving people notice as well. I mean, there's nothing to say that we couldn't have gone to Nottingham Forest if we didn't want to spread the game. You know, be ambitious about where we play internationally. This is our showcase, and we proved the last time we played New Zealand here in the World Cup, there was no more exciting sport. We went down to the very last play for a place in the World Cup final. You've got, if he steers clear of injury, Sean Johnson coming over, who many would argue is the greatest player of either rugby code in the game at the moment. Why wouldn't you want to pay to go and see him?
Is it more of a draw? This might sound daft, playing New Zealand, because does the average rugby fan who's been battered every time he's gone, I've been at Ellen Road a few times when it's been tight for an hour and then Australia run away with it at the end. This is a series England fans will genuinely think they can win. New Zealand will think they're going to win. It's all in the balance.
These are the four nations holders. Depending on how the Anzac test goes, this is, over the last 3 or 4 years, as good a team as there is in the world to go and see. And I think, again, you know, don't ask people like us who are long in the tooth and go and watch it on the moon at 2 o'clock in the morning. Ask the young lads. Would they rather be at a bigger stadium and part of a bigger event and on a bigger stage? I suspect everybody would.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, that's the question on Twitter, RL on RY. Where should the games have been? Are you going to go to the games that we've got?
Let's ask about Magic. I mean, hopefully by then you'll both be establishing the Warrington First Team. How exciting is the prospect of playing at St James's Park?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, any player will tell you they want to play in front of a good crowd, a good stadium, with a good build up, and I think Magic Weekend over the years has been really good. I think I know we can't have it at the Etihad for reasons, but it's been really, I can say it's been really successful, and I think Newcastle is as well. I know it's been quite well marketed. Mm-hmm. So if the crowds come out, I mean, players are going to love it, that's for sure.
That's your question, you two. Do you notice the crowd when you're playing?
Say you don't, but I do 100%. I know, like, when
what is it? The noise? What is it about it?
Definitely coming out, you hear the noise, yeah, and screaming like Warrington. So you do hear it, but I suppose then once the game gets in, you just focus on the game. Like, you've got your adrenaline. So, but you do notice the crowd; they do play a big impact.
Yeah, definitely
on the game.
Good stuff. The King brothers with us tonight from Warrington. More tweets. Yeah, sorry, jump in there. Went off on a tangent.
David says, introduce a maximum squad size, ring fencing of talent. If clubs want players, they should use them. Simple. Let's also, while we're talking about squad sizes, just scrap the whole here's our 19-man squad nonsense.
Because, agree.
Or if we're going to do it, let's police it properly rather than say, oh, well, here's a player we forgot, but he's actually going to play this
game. I think the reason it was brought in was for wholesale abuse. So there's always going to be odd players who get injured in the last training session. And I think there is a system whereby you have to present paperwork to swap guys over. There's going to be the odd one every now and again. At the moment, there seems to be quite a few of them, but I think it was brought in because St Helens played a whole team of young players, which obviously caused some consternation down at the local bookies.
Yeah, it did. I had a very interesting chat with Martin Gleeson about that. Yeah.
He said
he had a quite a big bet on it, and it ended up costing him about, I think, £15,000 more than he would have won. Because he got found out.
Well, he only got found out because he did it in his own name, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. We'll move on.
Come on,
we'll
move on. Thanks to Willows Road for the praise. I miss the Willows. I love that ground. Philip says, never understood why they gave up on A teams. Lily says, we need to bring back the reserve grade league. It'll help more young players come through. Mark says, we should have an under-23s league that also has a county of origin series. Yorkshire versus Lancs. And that should be standard for Super League clubs. Yeah. And Michael says, no, expansion teams are finding it hard enough without playing young Super League players. And Scott says, to be fair, if we had them at Wembley, wouldn't fill the stadium. So these venues fit the bill, decent, and look good full. I thought Wembley looked great for the World Cup semi-finals.
60,000.
I know half of the top deck was closed off. I was in the other half, but it looked superb. The atmosphere was absolutely wonderful.
And I think it's about ambition, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're confident in your sport, you sell it. And we've had International Rugby League in the not too distant past where we've gone to Wembley and sold 75,000-80,000 tickets. We've been to Elland Road. There's been 40,000-odd people there for series deciders.
Yeah,
we can do it.
And I think, in fairness to Scott, Wembley holds 90,000-odd.
Yeah.
90,000-25,000 is quite a difference. We have got places in the middle.
Absolutely.
That we could have hired. We could have got. There's one over the road. They probably would have chopped your arm off to play it there just for a bit more money for the football club.
Well, Richard's mentioned Elland Road as a venue.
Elland Road.
And they are hosting two games in the Rugby Union World Cup as well this autumn. So it's not as if rugby will not be played there in some form.
Exactly. So it shows you that the ground was available.
Yes.
If they would have wanted it there. Well, let us know. You know, on Twitter at RL on RY, the lads have said they'd love to play. As soon as that origin thing was mentioned,
well,
fellas, you both.
You could even have. We talked about the England Knights. You could even have on the undercard to the full England and New Zealand, the England Knights against France or Ireland or Scotland or whoever they want to. You know, and the guys could play and get used to that kind of international atmosphere, and then have a game afterwards with the.
I certainly missed a trick not having one on before. We've mentioned before about the lack of international rugby league. Get England, Ireland on. Ireland, Wales on, or whatever it is.
Well,
Scotland, whoever it is. Get it on beforehand. People, rugby fans will watch rugby.
Hmm?
That's the one good thing about rugby. You go in a pub and there's a football team on. Some people won't watch it. There's a rugby game on it. All rugby fans.
I mean, I'm all for Scotland, Ireland, Wales playing against each other because you need to find internationals where there's similar quality and standard. But the French are the ones that are out on the outer at the moment. Hmm. And I reckon the French against the England Knights would be a really good game. It'd be a test for the Knights guys, be a valuable international for the French. The problem that the French have got is that it's normally predominantly Catalan players who played a whole Super League season, unlike most other nations where they can share the load. So if you were playing against the England Knights, and it included some of the guys like we've got in the studio, then you could blood some players from Toulouse and Carcassonne and Avignon, because you're comparing like with like.
Here's a thought, Phil. More joined up thinking here on Radio Yorkshire. You've got three test matches. You could have had one semi-final one week, another one the week after, between England, Ireland, France and England Knights, whatever, however you want to do it. And then you could have had a final just before the last game
of
the
series.
Well,
I think you may find there will be a European Championship around that time, but I don't think...
Well...
I don't think that we could exclude the French.
Where's that going to be played? It's some far-off place I've never heard of.
When is that going to be?
There's no interest in going. It's not on the telly. I'm moving on.
Well, the other thing is, why not England Knights against Canada, if they're an up-and-coming nation?
Mm. What about the British Asian Rugby Association?
Forget that.
Hey, don't laugh. Scully's a coach. Don't laugh, lads. You'll be getting in the ball.
He's also a coach in Italy while he's out there.
Yeah, that coaching seminar. Freebie. Scully, never. Move on. More tweets coming. Keep your tweets coming in at RL an hour. We do digress, but we love rugby. We're not just here to talk about our own teams. Although we are talking about them quite a bit.
The more we talk about these things, the more we're not going to talk about Wakefield.
Well, we do have some Wakefield audio to play. However, I'm going to save you from that because I think Dodger was a bit upset that he had to go and speak to James Webster yesterday.
He got more out of him than I did the other week against Saints, in fairness.
He did. Well, Paul Anderson said a few weeks ago, if they win the next 20 games, they'll win the competition, Phil. They've won 3 out of 3 now.
Yeah, and I think by their own admission, not playing at their very best yet, which you wouldn't expect 6 weeks into the competition. But suddenly their points difference looks healthy. They've scored 130, which was again an issue after 2 or 3 weeks. They're up into fourth, which is exactly where they would expect themselves to be. So it is now in their own hands. They've got a point cushion behind the teams that are behind them. If they win every week, obviously these guys might have something to say when they play Warrington in the commentary game on Friday.
Well done. One from seven, just missed that bit off.
That's a big test for them, isn't it? We'll know how far Huddersfield have come when they go to Warrington on Friday.
Yeah, it's been a tough run of games for you, hasn't it? Leeds, obviously. You had to go to Catalan prior to that. Leeds, then St Helens, and now Huddersfield. You know, the big game. It almost seems there's big games every week now in Super League.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm hearing it all the time, but every minute matters, doesn't it? Definitely. We know we wasn't our best against St Helens. Neither was we at Catalan, but we bounced back against Hull Kiar and Leeds, not blip like, but we didn't turn up to what we know we can against St Helens, and we'll be looking to put things right against Huddersfield.
Looking forward to it. I'm going to ask you both who your rugby league heroes are. You're going to probably me, Phil and Richfield really old now.
I've always looked up to Sonny B. Williams.
Okay,
he's just an idol of mine. I've always looked up to.
Okay.
My one's probably I've got quite a few over here, like Paul Sculthorpe's, Andy Farrell's, that them sort of players. They were tough, played for Great Britain, very inspiring. But I'd probably have to say Darren Lockyer. I managed to watch him on his last game here, I think it was Ellen Road, and I've just always admired him. I just think him, the way he plays the game, I think it's just very good. And just one of them players what sparkles, and as a youngster you just look at and you think, wow, maybe.
Good stuff. I don't want you to say anything to embarrass yourselves now, but you two really young fellas, you're going into a team full of very, very good players at Warrington. Is there any time you think, wow, I can't believe I'm in the same team as him, or I'm training with him, or, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I think I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't. You know, just so many top players. I mean, I don't need to name names because you know them already, don't you? So,
you look up every morning, you get into the gym, and you realise, yeah. Oh, I'm training with a Man of Steel here. Life's surreal.
Yeah, last year, you know, Academy at Huddersfield, and now I'm playing with the likes of, you know, Finger. So it's a big step up, and
definitely. Yeah.
How good a story is Kevin Penny? Because again, we're seeing it from the outside, but here's a guy who burst onto the scene a bit like you did. Great things said about him. Looked like he was going to be compared to some of the greats. He was, you know, people calling him the new Martin Afire when he first started playing. Didn't quite work out for him, but prepared to back himself by playing in a lower league. Then come back, now been given his opportunity and he's taking it. Does that kind of story inspire the squad as well?
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah, definitely. I really admire of Kev. I think everything he does. I know it's my first full time pre season, and I like to consider myself a fit lad. And all the way through pre season, I've been trying to keep up with Kev Penny. Mm. The stuff he's been doing in pre season is awesome. Like, it's good for me to look up to, and, you know, chase Kev Penny down, because sometimes me and Kev Penny were to Ed. We're always in the group together and we go at it, but you know, he's beating me at the minute.
It's almost like he never left.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
You can tell that.
Okay, good stuff. Keith Tricks coming in at RL on RY. You're more than welcome to join us. Let's have a look at the Challenge Cup. Draw made tomorrow night. All the big boys coming in.
Well, only four of them.
Well,
and not quite so big boys. And
yeah,
that's part of the problem with the cup, I think. It's just meandering.
Not happy?
No. I think we've lost the magic.
I don't think Paul Cook's happy, is he, at Doncaster? Winless all season.
But
what's
again,
happened?
Part of the problem, going back to dual registration, and we talked about it earlier, is that none of the dual registered players can play in the Challenge Cup because their parent clubs are not going to risk having them cup tied. So a club like Doncaster, who've had issues anyway, who might on a normal basis have four or five whole players, are going to a game where they don't have any. Well, doesn't that just devalue the Challenge Cup more than anything else? It doesn't take anything away from the fact that North Wales beat them and are a division below. Full credit to North Wales and Phil Massam, who scored four tries, which is a tremendous achievement. But does it not devalue the cup when sides like Workington and Whitehaven and Doncaster, who rely on dual registered players that don't have them, and then get beaten? I think it does.
Okay.
I also have a worry about Oxford.
Yeah. Beating at Lee Miners.
Yeah, and full credit to Lee Miners, and I hope they get their dream of drawing Lee tomorrow and they have their local derby at the stadium, and you know, that would be fantastic for them. But what are we trying to do with these development teams at the moment? Should we not be worried that the margin was 32-6 to a community club against a semi-professional club? How are Oxford, when they start their League One season just after Easter, going to promote themselves? When Bradford play Workington next week, on the back of Bradford having just beaten Workington by such a wide margin, how are they going to get people into the stadium? Not season ticket holders, but neutral people. We've got too many disparities at the moment.
Yeah, I actually watched the Bulls game yesterday, and Workington were good value for half an hour, and they should have been well in front. They bombed three certain tries within 5 yards of the line. Don't forget they played in midweek, and Phil Weaver said they had 16 fit players for that game. 16. So one of them lads was playing injured.
But again, we're asking part-time clubs who shouldn't be playing three games in a week to come up against a full-time club and then to go back there the following week. Why is that an attraction?
If you were a neutral fan... Yes, if Bradford were in Super League, that fixture wouldn't have got many more than it got yesterday. I'll tell you that now.
I think we're going down a very dangerous road with clubs like Coventry and Oxford and University of Gloucester about who you are exposing them to and why you think people in those regions should turn up to watch these games. I think it's dangerous because if we get it wrong, we lose another generation.
Okay.
And the history of rugby league is littered with trying to put teams in places and not doing it properly.
All right. So what you're saying, they shouldn't have been allowed in the cup?
No, I think the base, again, the cup needs looking at. I think that two things would help the cup. One is that if the cup winners got into the World Club Series, I think that would help. I think that would add an extra level to the final. If you knew that you won the Challenge Cup, you were playing the following season the World Club Series.
You're asking for joined up thinking again, Phil.
I don't know about that. I think the other thing is we've now got such a disparity between community clubs, part-time clubs and full-time clubs. They should play out so that you end up with at the most four Championship sides playing against 12 Super League sides. I do not see the point of hiving off the bottom four Super League teams from last year because they're already trying to catch up with the other Super League teams. You're now asking them to play an extra game. How does that benefit them? Actually, they should be playing less, not more. So keep the Super League sides to 12, everybody else play off until you've got four left, and then whoever those four clubs get, whether they're home or away, they've got a payday. They've got the chance like Lee had last year to take on Leeds on as level a playing field as you're going to get and possibly beat them. And every game will then be meaningful. And you will have less of these matches because you play to a pyramid and then you broaden it out again.
OK, fair enough. Warrington's a side that's had great cup success recently, fellas. You must be hoping to be part of that, you know, get to Wembley, win a Challenge Cup and become a hero.
Definitely be nice. I know a few of the boys say it's a brilliant day out as a player. I know And I know we're hungry to go down and do it, aren't we?
Going to video every day, every morning when you go in, and got pictures of when we've won the Challenge Cup, and just looking at every morning, thinking, you know, one day I want my face on that picture.
Yeah, you thought it was tough getting tickets for London at home. I think what it'd be like if we go to Wembley.
I don't think they get 30 tickets from that time.
No, it cost you a few quid. Yeah. You did. Great stuff, Rich. Wakefield Challenge Cup,
yes.
Realistic.
Oh, it's the dream. It's what I dream of. All
you can't
the
take
time.
Away his dream, Phil. Don't ever take away his dream.
I just don't see why they're playing an extra game.
No, I was ridiculously envious of Castleford last year when I was down at Wembley for us, because that's what I've always wanted for my team, and we've got to one semi-final. I think the record of Wakefield in the Challenge Cup since being promoted to Super League in 1999. Is dreadful, because I don't think they've ever beaten a Super League side, which is ridiculous in and of itself when they can sometimes do it week in, week out. But, you know, is the Challenge Cup suffering from the same thing that the FA Cup does at times? People don't want to pay to see an extra match that isn't on the season ticket. I've never understood why that's suddenly a new issue, because it's always been that way, but it seems to have been that way in the last 10-15 years in football, and getting that way again in rugby league. Why do people not want to pay to watch what they usually watch week in, week out?
Because it's disproportionately expensive. Because if you can buy 13 games for 200 quid and then you're asked to pay 25 quid for one game.
Is that not a club matter?
Why not have a fixed price for all Challenge Cup games of no more than £15?
Phil, when are you going to learn?
Sorry.
We don't have joined up thinking in this sport. Please, come on.
Sorry.
Phil, I expected better. Scully's been on asking if we're having a good time. He has, he's texted us.
Has he?
Oh, yeah.
Has he missing us?
We're missing you.
Yeah, yeah. Not that much.
But we're still giving you loads of... in fact, here, he's genuinely tweeting me back. He says, great, give them Wakey fans some stick. So there you go. That's live interaction.